ahead.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call to order the Town of Curry Beach Planning and Zoning Commission meeting for Wednesday, February 1st, 2023. The first item, call to order. One thing we have to do here is our chairman, Byron Ashbridge, is absent. He is out of the country on a cruise. He did contact us, so we need to excuse Byron from this meeting.
I'll make a motion to excuse Byron.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, great. So Byron is excused. Next, we need to look at this agenda and have an adoption of this agenda.
I'll make a motion to adopt the agenda as presented.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All against? Okay, so this agenda has been adopted. Next thing are the minutes that were distributed with the packet electronically. We need to adopt these minutes from the January 4th, 2023 regular meeting. Does anyone have any comments on these minutes? If not, let's have a motion to approve them.
I'll make a motion to approve.
I'll second.
All in favor of approving these minutes as presented?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, moving right along. Next section is public comments. Is there anyone on the line? Do we have a line?
We do not.
I have no line. Is anyone from the public here wishing to make a comment? Nobody signed up. No comments. Thank you. Brings us to old business. Okay, the first item of old business, item 5.1, is the ongoing list of text recommendations to chapter 15. These are basically the editorial type of changes that were presented several times. They were initially presented, and we discussed them at the board, discussed on November 2nd. Then John Batson and I had further discussions outside, and they were re-presented on December 7th. And we left that meeting basically with three colors left on the list. The green were the ones that we agreed to change. The blue, John was going to look into further. And the red were comments that we negated. We deleted the red comments. And in the meantime, since that meeting, John has gone back and looked at all these items and has presented his wording in blue that have been added to your packets. So there are two sets of these numbered comments. The second set has John's blue edits to them, and that's what we'll be going through.
Vice Chair, when looking at your document where it says deleted comment, for example, what is the comment? Is that the text of the regulation?
No. The deleted comment is my proposed initial change, which is no longer being proposed as a change.
Okay.
So it's being deleted from the presentation as a change. I took the wording out and changed it like that, Jim, just to make it hopefully a little easier to go through and read so we don't have lines and lines of crossed out stuff.
Thank you.
All right, so John, if you don't mind, I'll take the lead on going through the list. I think I understand your responses to all the comments. We'll go through them quickly. The first one is item 3, which had to do with the definition. And there is new wording that John has already developed for the building height, which shall be the vertical distance from the top slab of the entry point of the structure to the highest peak of the ridge height. And that definition is being adopted into the ordinance by your other text amendment change. So this one is actually completed already. Item number 10. The definition of dwelling talked about three or more families. It was very confusing. So that definition of dwelling is being completely deleted from the text. Is that correct?
Vice Chair, number 10, blue language is struck through. Does that mean it's applicable, or what does that mean?
That means that this blue now becomes a red, and it is a deleted comment. There's no change. Is that correct, John?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. Let's go over that again now, John. Because the definition of dwelling requires three or more families.
So
So, I mean, there's multiple definitions of dwelling, family dwelling unit, blah, 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 in our ordinance, and I don't think this is really needed. I'll go over them real quick for you if you give me a chance for ordinances. But I believe what we have in there is sufficient without the definition of dwelling all by itself.
Correct, because looking at the other definitions, we have modular dwelling, multifamily dwelling, prefab dwelling, single family, two family, and dwelling unit. So the word, the definition of dwelling itself is covered by all the other sub-definitions.
That's correct.
So in essence, Jim, to answer your question, we are removing the definition of dwelling from Chapter 15. We're not removing it from my list.
I want to make some comments. I appreciate the commitment to recognizing the need for changes and taking those changes on. But I'd also ask you to keep my function in perspective. Ultimately, these things come to me, and I will draft them both for presentation purposes to council, for the format that Ms. Chase and I have developed for the self-publishing app, and simply from a legal perspective. And it's imperative from my perspective and from the standpoint of the town's general funds to do this as efficiently as possible. In the years that I've been with PZC, I usually, and there are exceptions, building inspector certainly has a legal slant on the regulations. You all have a policy slant and not a legal slant. And since 2014, usually what happens is a topic comes up, it's analyzed, the policy considerations are determined, the objectives are set out, and I'm instructed to then draft those amendments. Compared to this, we've got two or three, I mean, even tonight, there's your document, there's John's document, indeed there are changes from those documents compared to the original drafts, and this has persisted through tabling motions for three or four meetings, which were also involved looking at the minutes of those meetings in order to make sure nothing was missed. All that makes it extremely difficult from my perspective as compared to sitting down with blank screen or existing code and then revising it. So I would ask you all to keep in mind, I don't think you all need to be drafting changes. I think you all need to instruct the changes that need to be drafted and to do it in a way that we're only dealing with one document. This makes it a lot easier. So I ask you to keep that in mind.
Okay, so with that in mind, then, Jim.
I really appreciate you guys bringing this stuff up because I can't catch everything. So that's one of my commandments.
So Jim, I propose that we continue going through this to the point where these are our recommendations then to you, and you take them and look at them as our counsel and determine whether they should go in or not.
That's fine.
Okay, so item 10, we recommend removing the definition of dwelling. And the same go for item 14 and 15. These had to do with the industrial group number being included in the definitions, which I believe was an inappropriate place. And John, I believe you agree that should be removed from the definition. So we're recommending that we remove those two definitions.
Can we go back to 11 if we deleted the definition? And again, because we don't have the code in front of us as we discuss these matters, if number 10 deleted the definition of dwelling, how do I interpret what number 11 is? Dwelling shows up as an agreed upon change, but we eliminated it
from the definitions in the number 10. So
You're not eliminating dwelling, you're just eliminating.
Yeah, we did this one.
Dwelling unit is a separate definition from dwelling.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, we went over a bit of this before.
Well, I'm sorry, I don't remember it.
Yeah, there's five, but there's a total of five that have that start with dwelling, but they have a different, each one refers to something different. So this is proposing eliminating one of those definitions.
It would just be useful to have the current text in front of us as we consider these changes.
Let's bring it
Well, on. The only comment there for dwelling unit, Jim, is that to be standard with all of the other dwelling definitions, unit should be in italics.
That's fine, but if I had the current text, I would see that there was.
Can we bring it up?
Beth, Amanda, can we bring that up?
I'm pulling it up.
Okay. That would be
which page?
Page 398 and page 399.
I can't get my pages. I have to get my section.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you. All right, so then repeating items 14 and 15, they are examples of industry groups that are given in the definition section. There are hundreds of industry groups, and these two happen to be called out in definitions.
Well, I might want to point out exactly where we're talking about.
Okay, that's under I, industry group number. 653 and industrial number 7999 are the two that we're proposing to delete from the definition section of chapter 15. Because they are not definitions, they are two specific examples of industry groups. Are there any questions on those two? Okay, hearing none, I'll move on to item 24. John, I'm going to have to question you on this one. It's a blue item that you did not address.
It definitely. I missed that one. I figured we'd just discuss it tonight. There is a separate definition of sign in the actual sign corridor. I think if we just substitute one for the other, that would be perfectly fine. And so I would recommend that we take the definition out of 1540.020 and put it into the same definition of 15.02.
Okay. So we'll duplicate the 1540.020 definition of sign in the front section.
That's correct.
Okay. But we're not going to remove it from section 1540.
No, sir.
Okay.
So we're removing the current definition in 15.02, but replacing it with what is in 1540.
Okay. Yes. So basically it's a repeat.
Yes.
Okay.
So you keep 15, you keep it there in 15.20 as well?
Yes, sir.
Okay, the next item is item 27. Again, a definition of tourist lodgings. It uses the term bed and breakfast, or I'm sorry, bed breakfast, which is not defined. So the recommendation is to remove the word bed breakfast from the tourist lodgings definition.
Isn't bed and breakfast defined by the state? Because they have regulations related to that.
I think you are correct, yes, sir. And in this recommendation, I just try to think about where we have a piece of property that will be conducive to this. Probably anymore, I don't think that there is. It's not a business model that anybody is practicing in this area at all anymore, I don't think. The business model is now to rent out on Airbnb as much as possible with a cleaning management company. Rather than reinvent the wheel, I just figured we could delete it that way. There was no issue.
Does anyone have an issue with deleting the words bed breakfast from that definition?
No.
Okay, so that would be our recommendation. Next item 34 is in section 1510.040, Charlie C. And this is where it talks about side yard setbacks, where they cannot be less than 5 feet on each side or less than 10 feet total. Which is, we can keep it that way. It is a true statement, but it kind of says the same thing twice. Because if you got 5 plus 5, you can never have less than 10. So. I have no problem deleting my comment and leaving it the way it is, because it is technically correct. Just a little wordy. So if that's okay with the commission here, I will delete my comment and make this a red, and it goes away. No change to 1510.040C. Okay, the next one may need a little discussion. Item 37, which is 1536.160. This talks about the TRC. And it basically says the PZC is the TRC, and it goes through defining this whole new organization of TRC and setting up rules for it, when in essence it's what we're going to do. So the question was, should we just delete the TRC reference and change it to PZC, or parallel the two commissions, which we are both? 160. I mean, I understand the intent that some issues need to go to a TRC, which is a technical review committee. I also understand that in some other towns, the technical review committee is actually all of the directors make up that committee. But we've chosen to define it as the PZC. So,
is there any specific requirements for TRC?
No. If I remember correctly, we were sitting in this meeting, we drafted this language and said, well, what are we going to call ourselves if we're reviewing the height limit exceptions, which is the only function that the TRC mm-hmm. has? Call ourselves a technical review committee, and then that other language came into play.
I mean, if leaving it the way it is doesn't change anything, does it?
No.
Yeah. No, I think Member Barlock was just saying it needed to be defined.
You see, TRC is commonplace in zoning ordinances and subdivision regulations, and it is therefore confusing to see a reference to TRC when we don't even have a TRC performing TRC functions. So if you're going to look at PZC weighing in on that, then I would eliminate the TRC language, since that's the only place it shows up. And apparently you don't have any other TRC functions.
So it'd be, your recommendation is to replace, every time it reads Technical Review Committee, TRC, replace it with Planning and Zoning.
Based on my understanding that this is the only place the TRC is referred to, yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I think we're...
Yeah, that's fine. And so you'd replace TRC with Planning and Zoning, and then you'd eliminate in Section B, the TRC shall be the Planning and Zoning Committee, right, because that's not necessary anymore.
Yes.
Yes. When you looked into the detail, it'll need a little bit of rewording, but yeah, that's the point. Okay. So the recommendation there is to change TRC to PVC. And then item 39 goes hand in hand with that. It's about the meeting schedule for the TRC. So that will get resolved.
We would eliminate that.
Yes, because it would be the PZC meeting schedule.
Which one was that? 1536 what?
1536 160F. The entire section 160, Jim, has PZC throughout it.
Yeah, but the online version F doesn't refer to meeting schedule. It says information required for meetings and appeal process are as follows.
Right here.
We can fix it regardless.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's all
there. Yeah.
We need to delete it.
Yeah, all right.
Are you saying not delete it, John?
I wouldn't delete the meeting schedule. I would edit it similarly to what I suggested in my notes there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I think meetings are taken care of every annually by the public body in adopting regular meeting schedules. So I don't know that you need to be redundant about it within the zoning board.
Jim, if you look further down under item F, there's another subtitle, application information, that doesn't have a number or letter. Go further down in there, and it talks about meeting schedule being the first Tuesday of every month at 7 o'clock.
Right.
Right, which it's not.
You all do that annually. Yeah. You adopt, but under the open meetings law, you adopt a meeting schedule, I think, every December or January. Mm-hmm. Officers, and that's posted on the website, yada yada yada. We can be redundant if you want and revise it to match the current schedule, but it doesn't need to be in there. It's covered elsewhere.
And I agree. I don't think we want to be redundant. A lot of my comments have been trying to eliminate redundancy.
Well, if you don't want the redundancy, there's one portion of that that needs to stay, and that is that the PZC or TRC or whoever it is will render its opinion at that meeting.
Okay.
That needs to stay.
Okay. Next item 43, that comes from section 1540.020 concerning freestanding signs. In the definition of freestanding signs, it talks about ground sign. So since ground sign is not defined or on the schedule of signs, the recommendation is just to delete ground sign from that statement. 1540.020 is the statement. Where it says ground sign does not mean billboard, that entire sentence would be deleted because we have no definition of ground sign.
We do have a definition of billboard, so yeah, I don't see any problem with that.
Okay.
So delete the second sentence under freestanding signs.
Correct. And then item 4, two more to go. Item 47.
Excuse me, Vice Chair. On 44, you've got a green code provision, but the comment notes that those signs are not defined. What's the agreed upon change there? Do we need to define them? I don't understand green.
I think pole signs and pylon signs are fairly obvious to people in the profession, you know.
So the agreed upon change is not to change anything?
No, that would be my suggestion, just leave them the way it is.
Well, the original agreed upon change was to define them.
Oh, to define it?
Yeah.
Do we have those definitions?
I thought that one was supposed to go to Blue.
No, we do not have those definitions in front of us at this point, but John, we can work on those and get them. Agreed, John?
Hold on, I'm trying to read this.
Okay.
I mean, the way you're defining it in that definition, you're defining a pole sign
you
or a
pole. But that is a little weird. I need to just sit there and ponder that for a few minutes.
And at 45, what do you? I think that's a little unclear as to what a suspended sign is. So that may be similar.
What do you guys want me to do about that? You want me to revisit this? And compile everything and then meet with the town attorney to bring you guys a draft set for next month?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, particularly since signs are one of the issues where people will always try to find little loopholes through to. So we got to make sure that it's a very clean definition and proper definition for all these things.
So 44 and 45 are essentially blue instead of green, is that a fair statement?
Yes.
Yes.
And what about 46? That's green too.
That's just adding a space between.
Oh, okay.
Item 47, 1540-060-U. John, if you could call that up on your laptop there and explain this one, because this one still doesn't make much sense to me.
It's a run-on sentence, so it should be commas in between.
Right, I understand that, but when read the beginning, it says, except in a state of emergency, any permitted or non-conforming sign or structure which has been damaged may be repaired and used as before, provided everything is within 30 days and 90 days of such damage. Then it goes into all this other stuff that's a run-on that when you put the comma there, it clears it up, but still that has nothing to do with after an emergency. It's just talking about signs. Talks about different signs being permitted.
Now, this would cover, say, a sign that was hit by an automobile and knocked down. There's no state of emergency exists, but it allows them to repair it at a certain speed.
You know, I mean, it seems to me that should be a separate category.
Right.
I mean, starting with internally illuminated, I think that we just, that should be V, and then V should become W. I think it just accidentally ran two paragraphs together, two categories.
I agree.
Do you see what we're saying? So
definitely see what you're saying.
And then correct the run-on sentence, but put V starting for internally, and then V becomes W.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
Anybody have any issues with that, breaking that into two items? So the first half would have to do with after the emergency, And the second half would have to do with this corrected
runoff. I'm pretty sure those were originally two different things that just got ran together.
Yeah, it's talking about internal illuminated signs and external illumination devices.
Definitely two different topics.
Yeah, it's two different topics there because external is totally something different.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, good. And then the last item was going back to the definitions, 1502.010 in Collector Street, it mentions a thoroughfare plan. And my question was, well, what is this thoroughfare plan and where is it kept? So John's response was he assumes that it would be the Powell survey that shows all the streets. And that's great. Is everybody okay with that?
I think the Powell survey does that. I've seen thoroughfare plans for other municipalities, and they get into defining collector streets and feeder streets and things like that. Perhaps the Powell bill serves. I know we have a Powell bill map. I know we get Powell bill funds. I don't know what a Powell bill survey is, if one actually exists, and if it does, I don't know that it defines or that it constitutes a thoroughfare plan. I don't think this town has a thoroughfare plan, so perhaps just a definition of collector street without reference to what we don't have would be appropriate.
Jim, you mentioned certainly the other planning and zoning commissions I've been on. You're absolutely right. They're very detailed in different type of streets. There's collector streets, there's feeder streets, there's all sorts of things like that. Do we have, other than collector street, do we have other definitions here for different types of streets, like feeder streets?
I don't know. I haven't looked at that.
I wonder why we even need to.
We'll look at streets in the definitions. I doubt it.
It's not feeder streets.
Then I'm wondering why we even need to have the definition
of a collector
street. Of a collector street, if we don't have definitions of other types of streets.
And just call
we do have street
plan the basic plan of the whole community.
Yeah, street.
You got street design. Can you go up to C, see if Collector Street is under C?
It was.
Or is it referred to anyplace else in the
not
the ordinance?
Definition. Yeah, that's what I would do.
Just delete it. Because usually you have different definitions of size or width or that sort of thing, depending on what type of streets there are. But if we're not defining anything in there regarding collector street, might as well just delete the definition.
Okay. Is everybody okay with that?
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to propose that definition be deleted. So that completes the list of items. So with that, Jim, I'd like to proceed with this. Is I'll take all the comments and write them up and send them to you as our proposal. Is that an appropriate way to proceed?
I don't want another document.
Okay.
I'll use the document that we looked at tonight that I've marked up. And so are you asking, except for the, I guess, building inspector can feed me the, I guess it's 44 and 45. Are you asking me to bring text amendments for review and recommendation next month?
Yeah.
Yes, we are.
Okay. Just on these that we discussed. Okay.
And we don't need a motion for that, I assume, because we're not
approving it. We're just giving Jim work. Okay, so then that text recommendation will come back to us to look at, all right, Jim, before it goes to council, just like the other ones do?
This is Chapter 15. Those are development regulations. The procedure for making amendments to development regulations is PZC reviews and reports. Council sets a legislative hearing. You have the hearing. Council acts. What I'm understanding is that you want to review and recommend next month on these particular ones we walk through.
Yes, that's correct.
And they'll be in you'll get them in the agenda packet prior to the meeting.
Correct. Thank you. You say these ones we walked through. Are you only talking about the ones we discussed?
I'm talking about this agenda item.
Okay, this agenda item.
Everything that's in this.
It's document. In that, yes. Thank you. Okay, so that takes care of item 5.1. And I don't see any reason to have this on the agenda any further, unless anybody on the board does.
Well, we're going to have
because we'll have the text amendment will come
yeah.
back.
Yeah, it'll go on, and you might want to reword the item as review and report on.
Correct.
I'll reword it.
Yeah.
She knows what to do.
Okay, thank you. Okay, the next item is a continued discussion of the town ordinances regarding private beach access points. We had discussed this a little bit last month in January's meeting, and I guess we didn't adequately close it out, but there was discussion last month. We could have the same discussion over again just to confirm, but that there was really no issue at hand currently on the item of beach access, so we were going to remove this item from the agenda.
Well, I'll make a motion to review or to remove private beach access discussion from future agendas.
I second.
All in favor of removing it from future agenda?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, ayes have it. Okay, item 5.3. Craig,
continue discussion. Well, you know, maybe about 6 months ago when we were in the midst of doing something, you know, much more important, you know, I kind of looked at the idea of green sustainability, planning and zoning elements, and I think I put together a letter for folks. There's really not a lot we can do. You know, probably the two major things really aren't the purview of planning and zoning. You know, putting electrical charging stations has been forwarded to the parking committee, and I'm not sure what they have there. And the only other thing is to probably recommend solar panels on things, and that's not really a planning and zoning issue either. So I would recommend that we remove this item from future discussions.
Okay, I make a motion that we remove the item from future agendas.
Also move.
Second.
All in favor of removing this item?
Aye.
Any opposed? No. So this item can be removed from future agendas. And 5.4 is also yours, Craig?
Yeah, this is, you know, going back to the home occupation discussion. I think, you know, I raised a number of issues there, and I think it was pointed out that we have a pretty good definition. I went back and reviewed it, and I think our definition is fine. I don't see any reason to do that. And what I did is I put together just a very quick handout here about everywhere in the ordinance we have a definition or a reference to the home occupation. I know in a future meeting we're going to start going through the various categories and looking at the permitted uses. And you just notice that as you go through this, that in most of them we refer to the definition, which is fine. But I think in two of them we, you know, kind of get rather lengthy definitions or that sort of thing. So I would just simply put this back into the kind of our library, that when we actually do get and start looking at permitted uses for the different zoning areas, that in RA2, that we change all that discussion of customary home occupations to simply read like in RA1 and RA1A, home occupations as defined in KBC 15.02.01. I don't think there's any reason to have all that other stuff in there. And the same thing for RA-2T is just simply have the same definition right there. And the only other thing, and I don't think we need to do anything tonight because we're going to probably have a much longer discussion of all the permitted uses later on. But the other thing, too, I just like to ask John is that for parking, we refer to home occupation, operator's residence, and then parking spaces in addition to residential requirements as per approval by the building inspector. Have you ever come across anybody or any situation where you need to approve additional parking?
I can't think of any. No.
Thank you.
I'm not Well, we think that the only reason that would ever come into play is if it's some kind of a manufacturer, mixed-use type living situation.
Like in the overlay district or something like that, okay. Anyway, I don't think we need to do anything but just maybe put this in, and when we get to our discussion of permitted uses, you know, just cleaning that definition up in a couple of the permitted uses for the different zoning areas.
I had one question on that. I noticed several times it had housing or occupation for emergency relief workers shall not exceed 30 days.
You know, I can kind of explain that a little bit. That goes back to one of the hurricanes that we had, and one of the churches over here was being used. I believe there was either some talk about it or they were being used for emergency staffing, emergency people. And I know Planning and Zoning had a long discussion about trying to keep it to just emergency people and make sure we had language in there that it didn't expand outside of that realm. I don't know, John, do you remember that discussion?
Question,
Basically, what if we needed them longer than 30 days?
I think nobody's going to really pay attention to the ordinance at that point.
Well, I agree. You know, then it kind of becomes a little, you know, that they're going to come and rent a VRBO for 2 months or, you know, Airbnb or rent a house. So I just kind of like, we have something in here that says, you know, they can't stay more than 30 days, but in reality, if we need them, they're going to stay longer than 30 days.
We drafted something for this particular church, and we focused on the timeline. I don't remember.
There was a reason for it, and if I remember,
what did we adopt those?
You know, I think this is what was adopted.
It's all on RA1, but the reason behind it was we didn't want it to turn into a halfway house or a rehab center or anything along those lines. It's basically supposed to be a partial retreat center for youth groups with the potential to turn into emergency housing should the town ever need it. And so that's why we drafted it the way we drafted it.
For that one location?
No, it applies to everything in the, well, location being the district,
now,
the property.
Would FEMA supersede anything that we did?
I don't know that FEMA touches on that. This is.
I mean, if FEMA came in and they ended up, because of the amount of damage that we had, was they wanted to stay for a couple months.
I think all this does is says that religious institutions can house emergency relief workers for a period not exceeding 30 days. That's all this does. I'm not sure how that impacts FEMA one way or another. It's not our emergency workers. It's not our property. It's not our institution. We're not putting any money out for it. We're not looking for reimbursement on anything.
But there's nothing here that would stop them from renting a house, a VRBO or however long.
No.
Okay.
No.
This is their church.
If I remember right, one of the churches were going to have a group of people, or thinking about having a group of people come in, call them emergency relief workers, or the possibility of calling them emergency relief workers, even though it was going to be just kind of a halfway house. And we wanted to put some sort of a restriction against the church doing that type of thing. It was a very pleasant discussion. I mean, there's nothing, you know, bad about it or anything like that. It's just that I think everybody agreed. If I remember right, the church was actually here in that conversation too.
Well, this text amendment is what they want. Is what they wanted.
It is actually what they wanted and agreed to. So I don't.
It wasn't there before this.
Right. Okay.
Look, I got some questions about this agenda item because it's been tabled or it's continued for 3 or 4 months. Part of it is what are we doing with this topic?
Well, you know, I think it's all part of our discussion that we started about a year ago when we were thinking about going back and looking at the permitted uses in each one of these different zoning areas. we keep putting that discussion off because we got caught up in different things. And
well,
so
we agreed that if it wasn't a permitted use, you need a special use permit.
Right, right. But when you look at the permitted uses in some of these districts, there's some concern as they were perhaps a little bit too allowing a number of things that we probably wouldn't want to have permitted to, you know, like schools and things like that. So this just came up as simply as part of that discussion several months ago, saying, well, home occupation is one of those things that we may want to look at. And so since it keeps running forward, you know, I just put this together. But someday...
So what do you want to...
You know, there's no reason to have this on any future agendas, because when we get to the discussion of permitted uses in each one of these agendas, and I think that's going to be on our agenda sometime in the near future, then we can start talking about this again.
So it's permitted uses in general, this is the first thing you focus on?
This is the first thing I came to mind, just simply because I read something that some town was having a real problem about this issue.
We can come back to it when we get to permitted uses in general.
Yes, that's the intention.
Got it, thank you.
So we need a motion to take this off of the agenda?
I'll make a motion to take this particular item off the agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
I'm sorry. Yep. Do we want to start talking about the overall issue of permitted uses in the zoning districts? Is this an appropriate time to start talking about that? I know, John, you've raised that issue too, you know, the same issue. Is this an appropriate time to start thinking about maybe discussing permitted uses to go through the different zoning areas? And
I don't think it's time for you to put that on the agenda and remove some of this other stuff that we're not talking about anymore.
Yeah, okay.
Or is that something, I know in the past there were issues like, Tony, the thing we had with Duke,
yep,
where you and Ken were a little subcommittee working outside of this meeting to put together, say, a presentation and bring it forth. Should we have something like that to have work happen outside of this hour time frame here, rather than come in, and I'll say, like I did with my list, which was very lengthy, just kept going and going, whereas if we could work on it outside the meeting and come in with a more pinpoint, factual approach.
I think that's what I was referring to earlier. That actually makes my job extremely difficult. What is better is if we discuss it as a public body, note your concerns, reach a consensus on the changes you want, instruct me to draft it and bring it back to you to see if it fits. That's 10 times easier on me,
okay,
rather than wading through documents that somebody else has produced.
Just as an example, and I agree, I mean, just look at the following for permitted uses in the RA3 district. You've got family dwellings, you've got boarding houses, guest houses, tourist homes, etc., hotels and motels with restaurants, schools, institutions, public buildings and facilities, mm-hmm, you know, religious institutions, public museums, art galleries, libraries, parks, hospitals and clinics. I think it's very appropriate now that we put the discussion of permitted uses on as an agenda item and maybe start going through this as a public body to give...
Well, and it really can be quite simple. Each agenda, you can take a number of the zoning districts, three or four of them. We meet, we discuss, and we reach a consensus on which of the permitted uses you want to keep, which you want to avoid, or which you want to add. And then tell me to go do that, and I bring it back to you next month, then you can say, yeah, this looks good. And meanwhile, you discuss the next three or four. That's just a lot more efficient way to proceed, in my humble opinion.
So I will make a motion to put on for future agendas a discussion of permitted uses in zoning districts. And we can do that. We can kind of work through, you know, a half an hour each night or something like that and just get a consensus then. So Jim can...
I don't need a motion for that.
You
That's
know?
More just when I send out the email.
Okay, all right.
The agenda, you would...
So you don't need a motion, but...
Mm-hmm. That you would ask...
Assuming this is an email, so I'll say go ahead and put it on.
I'll
okay.
Put it on.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Which districts do you want to do first? You want to take it from
I think probably the simple thing is to start with the first one, which is RA1.
You want to do three or four next time?
Yeah, I think three or four. I think the simple ones are going to be the...
Please tell Ms. Chase which four you want to do next month.
Okay, I would say RA1, RA1A, RA2A, and RA2T.
Okay, thank you.
Skip an RA2?
I didn't.
Yeah, skip two.
Oh, I skipped two. Oh, you're right. Okay, I did. Okay, I'm sorry. Then RA1, RA1A, RA2, RA2A, and RA2T.
Okay, yeah. Next time. I'd just like to remind everybody that I did put together that matrix comparing the different points of the document several months ago. So,
you know, and in that context, we can bring up the matrix, you know, the home occupation definitions and stuff like
right.
that.
Okay. Okay, so that hits old business. New business, item 6.1 is a proposed text amendment. Jim?
I'll take that, Vice Chair.
Thank you.
I drafted this the morning after the HPC quasi-judicial hearing because it was real apparent that we need to do it. If you look at the present version, the building inspector shall provide a report on the COA application to HPC. I always get my commissions mixed up. Were all of you on the HPC?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. If you recall that particular meeting, well, let me start with this. In a quasi-judicial proceeding, the applicant has the burden of proving with evidence, whatever the topic is, in this case, the consistency between the proposed project and the look and feel of the preservation overlay district. So they've got that burden. And the law is very clear that the HPC, in that instance, or council when they do a special use permit, a body cannot substitute its own knowledge in place of the applicant proving their case. You all have the expertise to do that, but the law doesn't allow you to do that when you're sitting in the HPC. The law says they have to prove it. Third point, one of these days we'll end up in Superior Court, either because of a denied application or somebody in opposition to it that has standing. I've done four of them, actually, four municipalities and four applicants. And it's very easy to get to Superior Court. The thing that you need to be aware of, and that I mentioned from time to time, is that these days, since 2019, when they rewrote the planning and development regulations as 160D, but the concession, the consideration the General Assembly gave to developers in order to get those massive changes was several fold, one of them being private litigants suing a town that win get attorney's fees. Not maybe, they do get attorney's fees. The particular statute actually outlines three different scenarios where a private litigant can get attorney's fees, and there's no quid pro quo, the town can't get them. It's just the private litigant.
That's bizarre.
And the last time I asked for attorney's fees in a municipal litigation, the figure would be, it was a six-figure amount. So, one of these days we're going to go to court, and it's easy to go to Superior Court. It's just a paper stamp to get into Superior Court to review a quasi-judicial decision. And if we lose, we're going to get burned real badly. So when you put all those things together, the risk, the fact that the applicant has to prove, and that the fact that the public body cannot substitute its own knowledge and expertise in exchange for the applicant's burden, then we need somewhere along the line competent evidence that speaks to the question of, in this case, whether the proposed work was consistent. Now think back to that meeting. I'm not being critical, but what we had was a mother of the applicant who came in, and it was obvious she would not be able to make that showing. I doubt she reviewed the designs. I think she was just here. And it wasn't until the building inspector stood up and testified as to the consistency of the work and presented findings that you all adopted in exchange for that, that's when the hearing turned around from being what you would have to deny if she couldn't prove it to the way it should have been. It was a proposal that should have gotten a COA, but they wouldn't have gotten that COA without that testimony. So with that, and if we're going to go to court someday, it would be recommended to have more than just testimony. It'd be recommended to have a written report that the building inspector would submit as an exhibit to that record, and then would testify about during the hearing. So that's where this text amendment comes from. Prior to that, it wasn't specified that it should be in writing. Prior to the proposed amendment, it wasn't specified that it should address consistency or inconsistency with the standards and review criteria. Prior to that, there wasn't a requirement that the building inspector should testify. I think all those things makes the quasi-judicial practice or hearing in a COA matter much more user-friendly, frankly, because I don't think a lot of lay people without an attorney would be able to make that showing. We wrestled for a year with certain concepts on it, so it's not particularly fair to tell the layperson that's what they have to do, but that's what the law says. So let's bolster everything, including our position on the record, via the text amendment. So, be glad to answer any questions. You all can discuss it. This is a development regulation, so this is actually PZC's review and report on this proposed amendment. Likewise, there's a proposed consistency statement that you would adopt based on your decision on this amendment.
Yeah.
I hasten to add that the consistency statement reflects your adoption or your favorable opinion on the text amendment. I didn't do a pro or a con. Yes, sir.
Yeah, based on what went on when she came, are they able to back out of the situation in the middle of the meeting? I mean, let's say that we didn't know her from Adam and that it was obvious right away that she didn't have a clue what was going on.
HPC has the authority to continue a hearing. And as a matter of fact, if you do it in the right way, there'd be no further need for notice to be published or provided if you do it the right way. So yeah, you could do that.
Jim, I think this is great, you know, that we have a document that reviews this. The way it's written, I'm a little concerned. Because suppose we don't agree as a HPC with the recommendation, in this case by John. The way that it's written right now, it almost sounds like why even bother to have an HPC, because...
No, it's a recommendation.
Well, we got to make sure, you know, it says, well, the second part says recommendation. But the report shall be included in the record as to whether the proposed work complies with the design standards and review criteria. That is really what we're doing. I mean, that's what the HPC is all about, is that statement right there. So is there any way you can modify that a little bit, like saying in his opinion or something like that? So if we disagree as an HPC with the recommendation, we're not... subject to...
Well, I can do it like we do for zoning amendments, PZ. In a zoning amendment, PZC's report to council is not binding. We could use the same qualifier here. You'll make a recommendation to HPC, said recommendation not binding on HPC's decision.
I think that would be a better way to word it.
If you instruct me to word it that way, then that's
I mean, does that make sense for the...
Yeah.
Yeah, just... Because I can see a situation where you have this where, as part of the lawsuit, well, you've got the building inspector saying it does comply.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, that's what you guys should be doing up there.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to... If I'm having to review it and certify it, then why are we making that property owner go through this
law? It doesn't say certify.
Why are we making this property owner go through this whole meeting when it's going to get approved anyway? So,
No, I think your recommendation is important because you provide, but I think we have to be clear that it's just a recommendation, you know, and...
Is it a recommendation or John's just stating the facts?
Well,
it's a recommendation. If you go online and you look at HPC proceedings across the nation, you'll see that most of the regulations require staff to provide a recommendation on the application. That's pretty SOP, and that's what I think we ought to do here. I don't mind putting a qualifier on there that it's not binding on.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I'm all for this, you know, a staff recommendation, so to speak, but it, you know, make it clear that it's a recommendation, his opinion, but it's really the responsibility of the HPC to make the final decision.
It should be the HPC's decision to decide, period.
Oh, no, I agree, 100%, yeah, 100%, yeah. But it's your insight and your recommendations, you know, which is good.
I mean, I can tell you what's going to happen. I'm going to write my recommendation, and half the board is not going to review anything other than my recommendation, and then we're just going to go through the proceeding, and that's just the way it's going to be.
Well, if we hadn't had that in the first instance, I don't think that applicant would have gotten that COA.
In my opinion, a COA that's as clear-cut as that shouldn't have to go through the whole process. That's my whole point. So,
well, you were the one that determined it was a major project.
That's because there's no other way for me to look at it based on the design standards.
Well, that you deal with what you got, and that's what council has approved, and that's what's the code. If you'd like to entertain a motion to report favorably on that text amendment as modified, that'd be fine. Yeah. Then I'd ask you to review the proposed consistency statement and entertain a motion on adopting that.
Well, I'll certainly make a motion that we direct council to develop a proposed amendment. I personally would like to see it before we vote on a consistency statement, because John's concerned about the wording.
Back next month.
Hmm? Yeah. Just ask. That's what I'm trying to say. To have it come back next month.
So we'll review and report on it. PCC will review and report next month. I can tell you exactly what it's going to say.
Well, I mean, if you want to do that, then we can.
Well, let's just the last red word granted. Insert a semicolon and the following text, said recommendation not being binding on HPC, period.
And how about something that, at the very beginning, the report would be included in the record and address whether, in the building inspector's opinion, the proposed work complies?
Why'd you guys even set this thing up if you want me to give you my opinion on whether or not it applies or not? And we thought that's what you guys should be doing as the Historic Preservation Commission. I don't mind doing
Or how about this, John? How about rather than the word complies, you know, somewhere I think it is appropriate for you to discuss.
It's definitely appropriate for me to certify that there is a completed application that meets the design standards that requires a major COA, for sure. But should I also make a recommendation to you guys that it meets all the design standards? I mean, I thought that's part of what this meeting is all about.
If they cannot substitute their knowledge for the evidentiary burden, if you hadn't made that testimony in that particular COA hearing, and if you went by the legal book, that COA application would have to have been denied because she didn't make the evidentiary hearing.
Well, I don't think anybody in that meeting knew what was going on except for you and I, Jim.
No, John, I don't have a problem with you making a recommendation, whether it's in P&Z type of decisions or HPC. I mean, that's kind of standard for every other government agencies I've ever been at or watched. I mean, there's, I mean, we don't have a, well.
So much for a quick meeting. somebody run around the room.
You know what, so I don't have a problem with that. What I want to make sure is that your opinion is just an opinion, and it enlightens the HPC about some of these issues that we may not know about. So that's kind of what I'm looking for.
Well, let me tell you how I made my decision. The lady was struggling to kind of tell us, you know, kind of how the buildings, you know, what construction methods, what was going to happen. So I asked questions about that, you know, what was the outside going to look like? Did it have, you know, is the vents for the dryers going to be similar and all that stuff? So it looks the same as what she was already had in place. But having that information, that's how I made my decision.
And I don't think you get that every time. There could be some very complicated matters.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but, you know, I asked the question so I could make that decision, and that's how I arrived at that, you know, my decision. I didn't, you know, rely, you know, just on what I was looking at. There were some questions that I needed to have answered, and some of them are basically, you know, the building code.
But some of them, you said, were going to be very convoluted. Shouldn't we have access to staff to ask questions?
I agree with the chair. It's pretty SOP to get those staff recommendations on these type of matters.
I mean, I'll go ahead and make a... I don't know if we need a formal... motion, but I'm not inclined to recommend that we sign the.
Just tell me to bring you.
Based upon the conversation that we've had, to bring back a proposal next month.
You might want to entertain a motion to remand it back to the town attorney to revise as discussed.
Okay, so be it. I'll make that motion.
One second. What do you say?
Okay, the motion to remand back. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
I have a question. Is there a reason why is the building inspector, he wouldn't say it's in compliance with it? I mean, why does he have to make a recommendation? I hear what you're saying, that in other municipalities that they say that, but if he says it's in compliance, and it's up to us to decide if we're going to approve it.
I think that gets close to him stating almost a decision instead of a recommendation. I don't know if you could do it that way, but I think it's much more prudent to have a recommendation based on his assessment of whether it complies rather than simply stating it does.
Even if John wrote a report or a recommendation, I'm going to ask him the same questions. What's the color? You know, the color is the same. Is the aesthetics of the building materials the same? Does it meet all the standard building codes today? You know, those types of things. And what is, you know, we had some pictures and some drawings. That's how I made my decision. John just put clarification, you know, to help me understand it's going to look like what was there. It was simple as that. If he wrote a report, it wouldn't matter to me. I was going to base it on the questions I asked.
But it would matter to me. So I think, you know, I think we have to have something that we all... I mean, I respect John's opinion about
that. Well, yeah, of course, but it's not going to sway me. It's going to be based on the standards that are in place, you know, and we have to ask the questions about those standards that we all talked about and approved.
I agree with that too. You know, I think that's just one additional input into the decision. But you're right. I mean, the board, the HPC, ultimately has to make the decision.
Absolutely.
No question about it. And based upon the findings.
The decision is ours, and John is just providing to me data, and I'm going to ask clarifying questions.
I mean, we also have to consider the meeting we had was pretty obvious. I mean, it was a simple job. We knew the people involved. let's look at the other way. Something comes in that's rather difficult, confusing to do, and John recommends not approving it. And then the board looks at it, and we make our own decision and say we don't approve it. Can't they use that against us later? Well, your own building inspector said he's not recommending it, so of course you're not going to recommend it.
Well, that's why I think we have to have the language that we talked about that modifies a little bit to make sure that in the language we're getting recommendations, insights from the building inspector, but the decision, I mean, they are just...
You've got the same scenario on a zoning text amendment. PZC makes a recommendation and council can choose to ignore it. It's no different than that.
I guess so.
All right.
All right, well, let's...
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Did they vote on the motion?
Yes.
Yes.
They did.
Make a motion to adjourn?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Meeting is over.